Okay, so, you guys ready? Shall we just leap in?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. All right, so, howdy folks. This is a NeedCoffee.com podcast, a special emergency edition to discuss 12 Monkeys, now that the first season has ended. And I called together two friends because my brain hurts and I need a therapy session, which is why this is the 12 Monkeys group therapy session. So
wait,
on the phone.
You called what? Us?
Yeah, don't you remember? I just did that on Skype.
No. I mean to help you with your brain.
Yes.
That seems like a poor choice.
Yeah.
Desperate times call for desperate measures.
I mean,
God damn.
That first voice, of course, is Scott C., our Minister of Naughty Bits. Hi, Scott.
Hello.
And also with us, the second voice you heard was Professor Wolven, our Minister of the Techno-Occult, and the only guy who is probably going to put in a good word for us with Skynet when it takes over. Hi, Wolven.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going all right. Or in the age of Ultron nomenclature, he's pervy and he's weird. So.
Yeah.
In that order, by the way. In that order. At least for the purposes of characterization. So, I guess the first question I have for you guys, before we throw this open into complete chaos, is the question I posed to one or both of you after I marathon watched the last four episodes of that damn thing, which is, what in the hell did I just watch?
Well, you watched a television adaptation of the movie 12 Monkeys by a name I can't remember right now because I'm an idiot.
Well, the movie or the television series?
The movie. Terry Gilliam.
Oh, yeah. Terry Gilliam.
Our good friend, Mr. Gilliam.
Yes.
That's what you watched.
I did watch that on a base level, but it was so much more than that, which is the bit I enjoyed. Wolven, what do you think I watched?
That, as well as this very, it was a very interesting take by a lot of the people that were responsible for the Sarah Connor Chronicles, getting the opportunity to play around with time in a much more free way than they had in the show, the previous show that they worked on. That's what I was feeling the entire last chunk of that show, anyway. I found out that the people who were in Sarah Connor Chronicles, or the writing staff for it, were on the writing staff for 12 Monkeys, and I was like, oh, this is making a lot more sense now.
Well, I do agree that it was an adaptation of the film, but one of the things that I did like and what I think, because I don't make it past the first episode of a lot of shows, and I know that's really unfair because a lot of shows need a certain number of episodes before they get their thing going. But the fact that they, and we're just going to call spoilers for the whole first season. So if you haven't watched the first season, go away and come back when you've done it. But the fact that they, by revealing that Goines had a daughter instead of a son, basically just put it on the table. Yeah, this is not the movie. This is totally not the movie.
You are definitely in a different universe and you need to get on board with that real fast.
Yeah, which I really loved.
Well, don't. Like, I mean, that's already been established with several shows like Walking Dead and Game of Thrones. Is like, yeah, we have this, like, core material, but we are going to take diversions here and there to make it interesting.
Even with Game of Thrones and Walking Dead, though, that, like, they both started out with an almost kind of slavish attention to detail and then had to realize that they were going to need to branch off into doing a different thing. I think its closest compatriot in so far as, you know, recognizing that off the bat right now is Hannibal. Like,
well yeah.
Brian Fuller saying right off the bat, like, look, we're going to do a different thing. It's the same ideas, the same characters, and the same personalities, but we're taking them in a really different place. And the sooner we all get on board with that, the more fun we're going to have with this.
Right. And I think Game of Thrones gave the attention to detail because for the longest time, and I haven't started watching season 5 yet, which I understand starts to diverge quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I, for the longest time, it was because I've read the books, just basically watching the books condensed and well acted.
Yeah.
So there was not a lot of surprises going on. at all. However, the one thing I'll disagree with you on is with Walking Dead, they very subtly said to the people who've read the comic book, yeah, you don't know what the fuck we're going to do. Right. Because when they had to shoot Rick twice, when he didn't go down the first time and was wearing a vest, Cosette will tell you, I was off the couch. I went, what? This is the basis for the whole, oh, shit. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
and then when the people who were doing the show told Kirkman, you know, by the way, that the CDC is in Atlanta. And he said, it is? Oh, shit. Yeah, then we got to go there.
Like, we're going to have to make that happen, like, immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that it wouldn't make any sense otherwise. But no, I do enjoy that where they say you might think you know what's going on, but you have no clue.
Exactly.
They start off with, in the beginning, it's like in the movie, the Army of the 12 Monkeys is a misdirection of red herring.
Yes.
But in this, it's like, no, it's real and it's very powerful.
And it's a lot more elaborate and powerful than you even initially think.
There is so much time fuckery.
Yeah. It's so glorious.
I know.
It's the more adult version of timey-wimey. It's time fuckery.
Basically.
Time fuckery, yeah. Well, the two things that I sort of gleefully and mischievously wish would happen is that they screw up the time stream in 12 Monkeys, the series, so much that it turns into the movie.
Yeah.
And so that's how the movie happens.
That'd be great.
No, I like Cole's hair.
Well, that's true. He has hair. I guess, yeah, that was the first sign. We have a Cole with hair.
Right. But how do you maintain that in the future? Like, your future has product? How are you styling that?
Well, and the other thing, and I mentioned this to Scott, I think, is that when they went back and found in the message a reference to the 12 Monkeys.
Yes.
My thought was initially, oh, I wonder if they just made that happen and they don't realize they've made that happen.
Right. And
which, considering this show, I wouldn't be surprised.
Still a distinct possibility. I feel like, yes. Like when I was thinking about it, I was watching the chunk where you finally see the progenitor strain, right? You know, you've got the torso. Mm. And I'm like, oh, well, that obviously came back through time. Like,
you thought that too, yeah.
Like, that's my very first thought is, that's the pure strain, and it's thousands of years old, and yet nobody had ever seen it before. Somebody went back too far, too soon, at the beginning of the project.
Right.
Like, way too far.
I know, we're seeing that with the plants that are affected by time travel. I mean, it makes sense that maybe bacteria or viruses may be affected as well, and that's how this thing developed.
Yep.
It may not be. I mean, they engineered it to be, they got it from that, but the initial creation of it may have been just temporal mutation.
Yep. You might have just gotten out of hand and gone from there. I'm going to be really, really interested to see what they do with the Red Forest since you brought that up. Because they went a very, very different way with that than I thought they were going to. Like, I think they did a really good job. Speaking of red herrings, I think they did a very, very good job of that.
No pun intended.
Yeah, right.
Fish are affected by time fuckery. Here's a question too. So the whole paradox thing of items coming into contact with themselves, but differently in their time stream,
yes,
where they're not supposed to be. Now, did I miss something, or did when they got from Ramsey?
Yeah.
The necklace from the from crazy guy from Blacklist, forget his name. Isn't he called like the Sullen Man or something like that? Because he has no name.
Yeah.
But anyway, but his necklace, and they put it in the thing, and it became like one necklace, right?
Yes.
Did I get that right? Okay.
It blows up. Like it causes the paradox causes an explosion, and then what's left is, I guess, the merged remnants of both items.
Right. So am I wrong in thinking that there were still two watches at the beginning when he pulled that trick?
I don't remember if we see the second watch survive. I want to go back and rewatch the first episode this is a couple first couple episodes, because I don't remember if we see the second watch come back out of it. I remember he hands, you know, whatever remains, the remaining watch, back to Cassandra and says, "Don't lose this, it's gonna save our life," a few minutes ago, which was just a fantastic line. But I don't remember if we see what was the previous timeline watch. I think that might have gotten left in the explosion if we did see it at all. So I honestly I can't remember either. But I
just figured because the two necklaces became like a slightly larger necklace, I was thinking that, you know, you put the two watches together and you get like a really big watch from like the 80s or something. I didn't know.
A huge gaudy watch.
Yeah, exactly.
One of those fossils.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Yes, exactly.
There you go.
And the other thing that one of the things that's making my brain hurt is that if that's the watch that Ramsey brought with him that Goines gave to him in the future to bring back, if she gave him part of it, then how does it survive to get into the future in the first place? Or does it get to the future and then come back and that's...
Well, I think what ends up happening is the one that we see on, I guess, Sullen Man.
What is his name?
Pallid Man. I'll look it up.
Pallid Man, yes.
Pallid Man, where will you roam?
Noonan, yeah. I'd actually just watched the episode of The X-Files with him in it a couple of days previously to starting my 12 Monkeys watch, so I was very confused. It's the one where he travels through dreams and taunts Mulder. But I think what ends up happening is that it gets, like, the one that he wears that they end up, you know, merging with the other one. I think that's the one he said something about his father having having given that to him.
Right.
And so it gets taken, merged with the one that Ramsey has, causes the explosion, starts the Red Forest in earnest. I think what happens from that point forward is that it goes again to the future, you know, the slow way.
It's given to Jennifer.
Yes.
To give to Ramsey.
Yes.
Who takes it back.
And at some point, possibly in there, might go again on a different loop further back so that it can go to Pallid Man's dad. And then get given to Jennifer, who give it to Ramsey.
I need a flow chart. Right. I can't.
Like, I feel
well,
like.
Actually, there is a. There,
of course there is.
There is on the website for the 12 Monkeys, there is a like a time map
good
of the various travels they have.
Very good. That actually is a really good idea, and I think that ever since Primer, anybody who does anything with time travel has recognized that they're going to need to do that. Especially if they're going to get as like intricate and involved with it as this show does.
Right, and like I said, the last 3 to 4 episodes, it just basically went plaid.
In a gorgeous way.
I know. I was just like, where the hell is this going? Which I like with shows. I don't consider this bragging. I hate it. I can like, you know, Cosette would be watching a show. I'd walk in, watch like 30 seconds of it, and go, "He did it," and just leave the room.
Right. And then just be able to just go, meh. And that's what I thought was going on there, too. I thought I was like, oh, so Ramsey's the witness, and that's where we're going with that. And then they're like, wait, you think I'm the witness? Like, they actually say it out loud, and you're like,
right.
Oh. we're doing something very different then.
and can I just say that Kirk, and I'm going to butcher his last name, but Acevedo, I think it is? Acevedo?
Acevedo,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
I like him in a lot of stuff because he's in a lot of stuff, but he was great in this.
Yeah, he was fantastic in this. Like, it put me back in mind of his days as Charlie in Fringe, and like, you know, back when I could still watch Fringe without wanting to hit my head against something heady.
Well, the fact, the whole sequence of him in the prison, And then basically telling the guy, I just killed you without lifting a finger.
Yeah, oh my God.
That was amazing.
That was so good. Like his,
yeah, and but, that shows his and the group, the Army of the 12 Monkeys' ability to plan for the long game.
Yeah, like seriously and completely long game plan that. And like that's a thing he has learned now. Like he's not going to go back to being the Ramsey that Cole knew beforehand. Like when we get back in season two, Cole and the rest of the gang trying to fix time are going to have somebody who has done some serious, like, long, deep time thinking.
There's an also on the website, they have, like, little extra webisodes.
Yeah, I haven't watched those yet.
Oh, you watched them? Well, for
real. No, I said I haven't watched them yet.
Oh, well, one of them is very interesting. It's with some sort of archaeologist goes to, and what the hell is the woman's name? The head of the 12 Monkeys. Olivia.
Olivia.
And it's a plate from this religious group, the Druze.
Yes.
And she thanks him. It sounds like it's very old. Be careful with it. So on. And then he leaves. And then she smashes it. And inside of it, I think it's a thumbstick drive.
Huh.
So I saw that and I'm like, how far does this go?
Very.
Is this some future post 2043 that they have some better reactor to send people that far back that they can set up this stuff? Because it's like there are other groups involved in this, and for some reason they think killing 7 billion people is a good idea.
Right. Like it becomes in their minds necessary. But I think that what we're looking at is branching timelines played out in the various branching factions. Like it starts with the core group of the Army of the 12 Monkeys, then begins to branch out into the Daughters, then goes from there and just keeps splitting into these varying factions that all have their own unique takes on what they think need to happen for the future and for the sake of the future and how the future needs to play out.
And it's also very interesting how they approach it, because it seems like to change the past or change the future, it's very much like controlled demolition.
Yes.
You have to, because there are things you have to do to make things work. That's why until they do the final, for Dr. Jones, they do the final, we're stopping the plague. They have to keep time going the right way.
Yes.
Or they lose that, where they find the recording and everything. So at least until they make the final, stopping the plague, they have to keep everything going, where Cole has to kill the doctor in Haiti, and stuff like that.
Right, exactly.
And like you said, it does show sort of the long-term thinking of these various groups, not just the 12 Monkeys, but also Dr. Jones and everybody, that they have to, there are ways they have to do this that are complicated, but they have to do it to keep what they want to happen or not happen.
Right. And that's actually what I'm hoping for in season two is actually something that takes that all into account, because one of the things that we see in the last episode, while Ramsey is, gut shot and dying, is, they're counting off the next things that are supposed to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're talking about their long game. They're talking about, okay, we've ticked off this checkbox. It was the next thing that needs to happen. What's the next thing that needs to happen? And they say that, history shows that whatever, I can't remember his fake name that he was using to buy up all the corporations, dies at this point in history, right? And then Cole comes back for him and grabs him and takes him, we don't know where yet, whether back, into what is the new future or...
Right. And then something that the 12 Monkeys don't expect is he sends Cassandra to the future.
Right. And so
and
now...
they were like, what the hell? And right. when people who rely on history going a certain say go, what the hell? Oh, boy.
Exactly. So we're talking about, like, everything that has their, or is the basis for their future intel is now different than it was. So I would like to see those kinds of, like, I would like to see that ripple backward. Like, what does their intel look like now? Because all the intel that they had came from a future that is not the future that it used to be.
Unless somehow she gets put back where she's supposed to be and is there to leave that message.
Right. Exactly. So it's like,
and I must say, I do find it attractive, the idea that there could be another group outside of what we know with a better way of doing this.
Yeah.
That's manipulating everybody.
Right. They're manipulating all three groups that we know of that exist so far into maneuvering them into a very particular way to make a very as yet unknown but certain outcome for them. I would actually think that'd be really, really cool. But, you know, the question would then become, what's their end game, right?
Yeah, like, what was worth killing 7 billion people and probably most of human civilization?
Right. Or is that, for them, like, according to whatever this bigger group is that just a momentary blip? Like, is that like, oh, they die for now in this particular chunk of the loop, but once we go back as part of a larger loop, we'll fix that, and then they'll be okay again, but we've got to finish the first loop first.
Right.
Unless, like, the controlled demolition
right.
Thing, 7 billion people dying, that's fine with them.
Right. Like, for some reason, like God says, there's something even more important that is going on that needs to happen.
Right.
And it could be that it's far enough in the future that even though it's still a tragedy, it's sort of lost its immediacy.
Right.
It's like especially the dinosaurs.
Yeah, well, yeah, especially if you're doing the long time game.
Right.
Where it's really long time.
Right.
Then basically 7 billion people dying, well, that's nothing, you know?
Yeah.
Because if you're able to survive and get some people to survive, then you could put everything back,
exactly.
You know, in the future without having to change this horrible thing that happened in the past.
Right. You can actually solve all of it. And, you know, that 7 billion people, in order to maintain or to achieve some kind of much better end point or next stage for humanity, whatever that might be
right.
in their eyes, the eyes of whatever this enigmatic extra group is, might be what they see as needing to happen.
Like, and, right. and something I yeah. like is they're not going obvious as making them just straight up eco-terrorists.
Right.
There's been
no.
very little mention of that.
Right.
That
idea seems like, it's not going to land so much as a motivational, we're just going to rewild everything and make everything, you know, give it back to the, humans have killed everything, we're going to give it back to, you know, nature. It's like, no. That's kind of part of it, but ultimately,
there's something more going on.
There's other things that need to happen here. It seems to be much more about manipulations of power.
Yeah.
Well, and you've got the wannabe Kree, the 12
oh, yeah.
that showed up, which we saw what we think is the origin of them earlier.
Right.
They're late to the game, so we really don't know what they are except the next step in whatever the 12 Monkeys plan is.
Right.
But I'm like, okay, so you're blue and you're alive in the future and you kind of are wearing stuff that reminds me of the family in I Am Legend.
Right.
So now what? Now what are you doing?
So if I had to...
Obviously, they're going to dig up Charlton Heston and Babylon. Zombie Charlton Heston.
Yes. He'll save us
There's
all.
I want that webisode now. Woven, what were you going to say?
I think that, like, so, I mean, they're obviously part of the plan for, I'm going to guess, I'm not going to say that's this part's necessarily obvious, but I'm going to guess that their point in the plan is to spread the virus. I'm going to say that seems a little obvious, but it's maybe not because they've done some nice hard left turns taking us down an alleyway that seems obvious and then doing a very different thing with it. So I appreciate that, and I'm going to leave the room for them to do that. But at present, it seems like these are the, you know, the 12 that take out and spread the virus, and that the people that we've seen are their offspring. They're their descendants.
Well, wait a minute. They actually show a scene where Olivia is like, they have 12 babies.
Yes, exactly. So those babies, I think, are supposed to be distributed to various families in the world.
Oh, it's the babies that are the Cyborg Marys.
They're the inception points.
Oh.
And then those babies, as they grow up, having been modified in some way, this is where I get into like pure conjecture, so just kind of go with me here for a second. having been modified to basically be patient zero, but not themselves, die from the virus.
Right, Typhoid Mary.
Right. They are the Typhoid Marys. And they become these, you know, gene factories for people, for a kind of people who can survive the virus because the virus is already a part of them. It develops with them. So it's possible, if that's the case, that the long game, or one of the parts of the long game of the Army of the 12 Monkeys, is not just the spreading of the virus and making sure that history happens as it's supposed to, but also making a kind of human that can survive and thrive alongside the virus.
So they're going Oryx and Crick on this.
Right. Like, humanity as we think of it won't be able to survive this. But let's make something that can. And that might be what their game is, or part of their game, anyway. Like I said.
Yeah, I missed the patient zero part of the baby thing.
Yeah. Like, well, that, again, that's me. That's somewhat conjecture on my part, but the way that she was talking about them and the way that she was talking about distributing them to various cities around the world, just kind of like, that felt to me like very reminiscent of the scene at the end of 12 Monkeys where we've got, you know, the doctor going with, or the film, where he's, you know, talking about the cities he's planning to travel to. And, like, he's got a vial for each city, basically.
Right. So, but we also had the same, a callback to that with Jennifer.
Right.
On the plane, right, where we had the scientist, you know, previously.
Yes.
And I'm like, well, what is her game exactly? Because I thought she was, like, chaotic neutral, to use a particular term,
right,
you know, but apparently not.
Yeah, I mean, well, we still don't know what her entire game is yet, but like, she's definitely moved, she's drifted from her previous chaotic neutral stance to something much more motivated, right? There's not just a,
well,
the sense of her gonna do whatever she's gonna do.
Well, it, watching it, you know, you see, like, her with Olivia and how Olivia is very nurturing to her. And we also know that Jennifer's mother died, disappeared, something happened to her.
Right.
And her father was at times very condescending and at times borderline kitty touching.
Yeah.
Occasionally. So I think she is very influenced by the mother role that Olivia is giving.
Yeah.
So that's probably why she's more, and it seems like Olivia also has some daddy issues. So I'm thinking that may have influenced her more towards doing what she wants, as opposed to just flitting about being crazy.
Right.
Well, it may have been that Olivia recognized that, you know, Jennifer was a bit of a bomb, but if you could just direct her destructive power.
Control demolition.
Yeah, exactly. We go back to that, which is a you know, brilliant way of looking at how they have been attacking time,
right,
basically.
Right.
And the other thing that occurred to me is that, I mean, they were concerned about affecting the time stream so that, like you said, they lost whatever intel they had.
Yeah.
And it goes back to where if Cassandra does not leave that message, then basically nothing that we're aware of happens. So my question is it possible that they are playing around in a universe that you know, you can do that? Or is it simply one of those things where if you were to go back and change something fundamental, that you would branch off into an alternate reality where the, like, reality number one would stay there and keep going, you just wouldn't be in it.
Right.
You know?
Right. From what we've seen, you can create an alternate reality. Because we saw that in episode something or other. I'll look it up.
I think it was like seven or eight is where we see Cole actually makes a big enough change that things get really, really different in the future.
Right. But not different enough.
Right.
And it so, also it also shows that Cole doesn't necessarily get wiped out like he wants to because of what is done to him. So it can be done. Now, that we don't know that we don't that we have not seen if that means that the previous reality still exists in one form.
Right.
So
we don't yet know whether we are branching or whether we are overwriting.
Right.
Right.
And that's a very important question for the sake of, well, time travel metaphysics. I think going back to the shared writing staff, the shared creative staff aspect of this, when we looked at Sarah Connor Chronicles in season two, it was firmly established that these were not branching timelines. That when changes were made, those changes were made. And the future was rewritten. They took very, very seriously the there is no fate but what we make. Like, the future can be changed, and we can make it change. They took that very seriously. So if the same kinds of ideas are informing the writing for 12 Monkeys, then I would wager that it's the same thing, that we're talking about overwriting every time a change is made, that the future is literally overwritten.
But call, like, that pesky piece of, like, code or malware doesn't. Yeah,
exactly.
Or anybody that might be affected by the serum or whatever is done to them.
I was going to say that, like, the serum acts as basically an inoculant against, you know, whatever time changes, which is actually really a big, big problem. Because if the person who knows what the future used to be still exists, if someone who has been inoculated against the future and the manipulations of the future and time stream still exists, they can always screw it up again.
Well, not if they're not sent back.
Well,
I mean, it depends. You know, it depends on their choices if they want to go back and change it.
Right.
Well, and the other two interesting things are that, first of all, it's been established that Cole now can't travel.
Right.
So he's stuck in our present, right, quote unquote.
Yes.
The other thing is that apparently when you're given this inoculation, you are inoculated against time, which is why Ramsey did not age.
Yes.
So you could have somebody who has survived for who knows how long, thousands of years perhaps, if it would allow you to live that long, to the point where they could be a future version of them could be
exactly
manipulating all of this. We have no idea.
And hence we come around to the witness.
Yes.
Which is, I'm actually starting to, like, my little pet theory that I'm kind of, like, I'm nurturing and keeping in a little pocket is that the witness is Tiny Cole. It is the Cole that Cole has encountered this universe, the Cole that gave Cole the blood that allowed him to, you know, survive, that allowed him to continue being and living without the, you know, the aneurysms. I think it's him. And I think having watched his father die, having seen all of this horrible stuff happen, he is now a little bit broken and is trying to create a universe where, for whatever reasons that maybe we'll come to find in the future, he feels these things need to happen. Which would make the witness an even better nemesis than I initially thought he was when I thought it was Ramsey. Because it's literally him fighting himself. And I love that.
Well, no, my question is, so in that theory,
yes,
are you saying that Tiny Cole, the kid version of Cole that we've seen,
yeah,
grows up as a branching thing from the Cole we know, because he said he did, if I remember correctly, he said that he had watched his father die. And now, because he told, what's his face? Boyfriend guy.
Yeah.
Hang on, I pulled it up. Aaron.
Yeah.
He told Aaron, now he knew who to thank for that.
Yeah.
So, to me, and again, I could be missing something, because at that point, I think I was bleeding out the nose, you know?
No.
But,
no, you're right on. But, like, at the thing that he didn't know at that point previously, the memory that he didn't have before that instance in time, the thing that he changed, he never said anything about, you know, donating blood to some random dude in his house the night that he watched his father die. He never mentioned that, you know, there was this entire weirdly fraught experience that led to the death of his father. He just said he remembered watching his father get killed.
Well, don't forget, human memory is fallible, and especially when you're a young child.
Sure, absolutely.
And especially when you're traumatized.
Yeah, I mean, that's some deep, deep trauma. A lot of parts of it probably did get erased. But you'd think that at the moment that Cole is on the other side of the equation, that point at which he is there getting blood donated to him by himself, you'd think that he would... that possibly something might be triggered there. That a memory or a fragment or a sense of something might be recalled, some familiarity of the whole scenario might come back to him if it was something that he had previously already been through.
Right.
That
and
version of him had been through.
Establishing that he can't travel anymore, but that he is ageless.
Right.
I mean, what was it? Ramsey got one shot of the stuff,
yeah,
and he didn't age.
Nope, 10 years, and he looks exactly the same.
Yep. So,
10,
but,
40. He was sent back. Well,
yeah,
it
was 87.
Yeah.
No. So yeah, we're talking a 40. We're talking 40-year jump, and he looks precisely the same. Doesn't seem to have any health effects. Doesn't.
Well, that's whatever happened to his hand.
Right. But that seemed to be, I would actually conjecture that would be like a side effect of the serum itself.
Because he
wasn't properly prepped for that.
This is true. But, so the point I was trying to make was that maybe Cole, it's not even Tiny Cole, it's our Cole, but just centuries in the future or something.
Possibly.
Basically deciding that, you know, there is no way to fix this, therefore I can only make it the best it can possibly be, which would be what we have,
right.
You know?
Like, he sees everything that he's done, that the universe they had was actually the best universe that he could possibly have.
And it just involves killing 7 billion people.
Right. Like, but every other, you know, every other variant is somehow worse.
Wow, my, okay.
Well, but bear in mind, the way Cole starts with this is by telling you're dead. You're already dead.
Right.
So to him, he's not killing 7 billion people. That there's no way to save them.
Right.
But he does change because, you know, once you get to know some of these people, it becomes like he does kill the Haitian doctor, but he does, it's not a simple, you know, execution. He's gotten to know this guy, so it has become harder for him living in the past, seeing these people.
Right.
It's, you can't do, at least with Cole, who does have a conscience, you just can't do that without feeling something.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see if it is future Cole, what changed to make him say, oh, 7 billion people, well, it has to be done.
Right. Like, how does he move from the what seems like a burgeoning appreciation for love of the people who are alive at the time that he
and their foodstuffs.
And their foodstuffs. Their delicious, delicious foods. His appreciation for all of it to going to, nope, never mind. Everybody gotta die. And how does he get to that place where it's not only like a well, I guess people have to die, to a, no, this, if it, you know, like, if it is him as the witness, again, pure conjecture, if it is him, how does he get so hardcore about that? How does he get so deeply vociferous about that, where he needs that to be what happens? However, I just this second had an even better thought, if we're going to keep going down the rabbit hole of conjecture.
Oh, sure, why not?
What if it's Cassandra? Cassandra, who is now in the future with the time travel tech. Cassandra, who has had to be, is going to have to be further inoculated against the effects of time travel. Cassandra, who has already been primed with, you are walking through a red forest and the grass is high.
Well, and here's the other question, too, is that if she's been sent forward in the future, what's to, does her being inoculated against time save her from now catching the virus?
Right.
Because, you know, everyone there has got
question.
It. Everyone there is carrying it.
They're all immune already.
Yeah, well, to that particular version, it's like version 27.
Right.
And you've got Blue Man Group standing by, which are apparently, you know, bred to be the virus.
Right.
So
how are you, how is she going to, like at this point, is there going to be a way that she just doesn't get very, very sick very, very quickly?
And the other question would be to go back to where she was being prepped with the Red Forest and seeing the witness.
Yes.
If you rewatch that, look at her reaction to, is she reacting like someone who is coming near to themselves?
Right.
But then the question begs the question of, was the witness actually there or merely a vision?
Yeah, like is the witness even actually like a really real solid person, or is this a very like impressive construct?
Yeah, or is it like the tachyons used in Prince of Darkness?
Right.
You know, we can't send a live message, but we can send this back.
Right. And that
here's another thought.
Hmm.
Mm.
As I remember the death scene of Cassandra when Cole goes to 2017, I don't remember him really examining or feeling her body for like a pulse or anything.
Right.
Could this be some sort of massive fake out?
Where she has to, at that point in time, play dead in order to
keep things going,
Cole, and keep things moving? Because at that point in time, so far as he always knew, he found her dead body.
Right. So it could be that they know that he jumps out like right after she dies. So
right.
There could be somebody in a hallway somewhere with like the stuff that'll get her going. You know, the light flicker, they know, they run in, you know, jab the needle in her heart and get her back going.
Right. And that's a possibility.
Well, at that point in time, she could not know her involvement.
Right. She could.
So she could just be being a puppet of herself if she is the witness.
Right. Exactly.
And this is another thing that I hope they explain and is also very interesting. We get that through looking through Dr. Jones's like previous experiments that this doesn't work for everybody. This hardly works for anybody. How come Cole and Cassandra make it through the process pretty much unscathed?
And
why are they Ramsey too?
Yeah,
I meant Ramsey. That's what I meant.
Yeah,
like, but also it also with hearing about Cole's mother who happened to just disappear or something was coming after her. Maybe it's this other group that are seeding the past with children that can be able to jump and be part of this.
I mean,
we don't know. I want to say, I'd have to look it up again, but again, to the website, there are like little documents and stuff that maybe fill in a couple things here and there.
Yeah.
One of them is Cassandra's birth certificate. And it's burnt, so you don't see all the information, so you don't know, you know, who her mother was. I'm not saying that they're related, because that'd just be creepy as hell. But maybe other people went back and seeded the past with these people who could then, making them puppets from Go.
Yeah.
So
So, I mean, honestly, that would if you've got the kind of foresight and long-term planning that we're talking about with, you know, that comes with a massive time travel conspiracy, then, I mean, wouldn't that be what you would do? Like, you need operatives, and you're going to need operatives because so far as you understand for how the past has gone and how you've gotten to this point, these are the things that need to happen at these points in time.
That's another thing I wanted to bring up with this series. I've been very impressed with how, like you said, Widge, they're not doing the typical stuff. Like, you would expect, you know, if they're going to use a board game metaphor, they would use chess.
Yeah.
But they use Go.
Yep.
And then they bring in this obscure kind of Muslim group called the Druze, which I actually did some research. They do actually have something called Time's Guardian.
Yep.
And they're a very, very, very exclusive group and stuff. So it's very, you know, they are taking a lot of inspiration from other things that you would see in typical television.
Yeah. I'm actually pretty certain that somebody on the 12 Monkeys / Sarah Connor Chronicles writing staff is just a huge Go fanatic. Because, like, every reference they make to Go, and also there's a major episode of Sarah Connor Chronicles that I've used for, a site article and a larger paper. Strange things happen at the 1-2 point is a Go proverb. And they keep coming back to these references because in a Go game, there are more Go, like, potential games of Go than there are atoms in the universe. And that's, like, by several orders of magnitude. So, this possibility that everything we are doing, everything we make, every change we make, depending on when we go back, depending on which move we decide to change, changes the universe that we can create from that. So it becomes this very apt metaphor of infinite potential.
You know, I don't think we're helping Widge's headache.
I'm going to guess not.
Widge, how you feeling?
Hemorrhaging. I think the one criticism I would have of the first season that bugged me, I think, was how quickly Ramsay went from best friend to nemesis.
Right.
And I understand why, and I know how they set it up, but it just seemed to me to be a really, you know, sharp turn.
I agree. And I did feel that was a
so
whiplash. Like, all of a sudden you've got a kid, and now that's the literal most important thing to you? You've never known this child before.
I wonder if, and we've said on certain series that it's good that they're not taking too much time getting to certain places, but I think this is sort of the bad side of doing that, because you go so fast.
Right.
That you're like, no, we need a little bit of time to establish stuff.
Right. And it would have been, honestly, in this instance, it could have just been as easy as peppering our moments in the future with a little bit more groundwork of him coming to engage with his son, coming to, like, build a bond between his son, you know, him and his son, just a few more scenes. They wouldn't have even had to been, like, whole episodes or anything like that.
Right.
Just, like, a few more scenes of him and his son emotionally bonding and connecting, because it seems like this very sudden, oh, I have a son, now he's the most important thing to me, period.
Well, and I actually think it would have been a more gradual process of trying more to reason with Cole and with Jones and with whatever
right.
else. I did like the whole thing with Jones about, you're basically doing this to get your daughter back.
Right.
And I've got to stop you to save my son. I loved all that web work that was set up.
That was beautiful.
But yeah.
It's a very quick jump for him to go from, these are the people I've loved and worked with for, you know, to try to fix this future for literally, you know, years. Screw him.
I can see him saying,
let's remind people we are three people who do not have children, so maybe there is some magical bond. I don't know, but
hormones are a powerful thing.
Yes, but I think you might be right, is like they kind of rushed it a little.
Yeah.
Well, my thing is that, you know, I can believe that Ramsey would, in a heartbeat, say to about everyone in that base, screw them, except for Cole.
Exactly. Like,
yeah, so Cole is the one, they've been brothers, you know, they haven't killed each other many times when they could have.
Right, since they were literally little tiny children.
Yes.
So.
But then a girl shows up.
Right, and suddenly
and
all
then
of it
you,
goes
then
out.
You know, it's that thing where the best friend gets pushed aside because of a new girl, and he gets all pissy, and it's like, fuck you, man, fuck you. I'm gonna destroy the future.
Right, and if that's the case, if that's the trope hole they're going down with that one, I'm a little disappointed in that.
I think he does have some problems with his relationship with Cassandra, but I also think that was just part of it. I think also a lot of it is because I have a child. I'm truly anchored to this place that we're trying to erase. Uh-oh.
Right.
And I got over it because the whole, like I said, the whole Art of War sequence.
Yeah.
With the guy in the prison was just.
I was going to forgive a lot because of that.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was like, okay, you got me here. You gave him that moment. I'm good.
Yeah.
So I'm not dismissing what they did. I'm just saying it kind of could have been a little smoother.
Right. The transition could have been just a little bit.
It was a little stumble. It was a stumble. It wasn't like fall on your face.
Exactly.
No.
Exactly. Like a few more scenes of him and his son bonding, a little bit more of a gradual transition between, you know, trying to reason with Cole, trying to get them to change their minds about the, you know, how they're going about saving everybody. And then when he realizes that Jones is trying to save her dead daughter, that there is no hope in reasoning with them. And then some kind of altercation happens and then he burns the lab down. And then, not just all of a sudden. Burn this lab down, and we're out. Shoot Cole.
But what also is interesting, that's something we haven't discussed, is Dr. Jones.
Yes.
I truly think that would have been rocks if she went into physics instead of art.
You might be right there.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, she is a bad bitch.
She's pretty hardcore. She's pretty hardcore.
But what I wonder about her is when she gives Ramsey the big speech about it's not just the 7 billion people, it's all the art, it's all the civilization that gets lost because, you know, all that knowledge goes away, all the maintaining of sites and all that goes away.
Right.
I wonder, but then we find out, you know, she lost her kid. So I'm wondering how, you know, was she bluffing? Was she just bullshitting Ramsey? Does she really believe that, but it's also her kid? I'm wondering where
I think it's a both situation. I think she does believe it, but I think she uses that as the kind of, you know,
justification
smokescreen for, you know, what her initial motivator is. And I like the fact that when we find out that she was initially not even going to have the kid, like she was initially not even going to have the baby. She was, you know, she was going to abort, and then the plague hits, and the man she loved dies, you know, she loves dies, and her family dies, her parents die, like, everybody around her just starts dying. So this becomes, like, it's not just, like, the, oh, I'm a mother, I had a child, I have to save her. It's this very...
She was the last straw.
Right. It's this very desperate, emblematic kind of... Everyone and everything I love has died, and the last thing I had to remind me of that is something that I didn't want. It's a person that I did not want in my life. And that becomes this really complex, really rich kind of thing there, and I think it's pretty amazing.
Well, that and she basically flat out lied to everybody about what the what was it? Arrow point or whatever it was?
Spear point.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah. What? Yeah, that was hard. Talking about hardcore, that's when it got into the hardcore.
Yeah, it just burns it. Just burns that research. I was like, oh, so no different path then. Okay, fair enough.
Well, but I mean, I take her point that it's going to mutate again.
Right.
and they're not going to be able to keep up with.
Right.
But are they? That's the thing. Can they? We don't really establish that. They may be able to, but that would mean that people would start settling into this reality, and that doesn't serve our purposes.
And I think that ultimately that's going to be how the 12, like, what their role is. Like, they're going to be the proof from a very different direction than anybody expected that, no, we can move with this. We can live alongside this. We can integrate this virus, this, you know, massive horror into our lives. Here we are. We are, you know, we adapt as it adapts.
And that's, I think, another thing that does come into this is we see, you know, is that's one of the main arguments in this show is, do you accept what is and go with it? Or do you fight, maybe futilely, to try to change it? And we see that with Cassandra's Aaron. We see that with Spearpoint. We see that with Ramsay. That, no, this is going to happen. We might as well make the best of it. Or, but then you got, like, Jones and Cole and those people saying, no, this was, I think, what makes it a little bit more on their side is this wasn't like a natural disaster. This wasn't just a virus that just popped up on its own.
Right.
Somebody did this. Somebody committed this massive crime and they got away with it.
Right.
So it makes it a bit more, it's not just, I can't accept this reality. It's just, this was imposed on us. We were not given the choice. These fuckers got away with destroying the world. Fuck them, we're going to fix it.
Yeah. And I think that that is, especially for many of the people who have, or she's managed to get along on her side, I think that is the major motivational force behind it. It's that someone did this to us mentality.
Right.
And we can now fix it before they get the opportunity to do so.
And I was, talking about reversals, like right-hand turns, the evolution, as a counterpoint to Ramsay going too fast, the evolution of Aaron, the boyfriend, into another nemesis.
Yes.
I thought that was handled really well.
Yeah, like, you get to see literally every brick that gets laid that pushes him just that little bit further.
Right.
Until he's just like, and I can't deal with this anymore. I know that this is real. I know that this is happening, but it's going to happen. I can save the people I need to save. I can save the one person in all of this that I actually care about. That's all that I can do. That's what I can make happen. And that becomes his sole, like, his motivating force. That becomes his only reason for engaging in this at all.
Right. Fascinating.
Yeah.
It my head still hurts, but it feels a little bit better.
Well, what else do you have a problem? Yeah, let us open up.
Well, no, it's just
tell us about your mother.
No. basically the playing around towards the end of Cole meeting his young self.
Yeah.
You know, finding out that Jones knew him from the past.
Yeah, and she kept that quiet.
Yeah, she kept that close to
her
chest.
Clue. That was the other interesting thing. There were never any hints
that
she knew about this bit.
That she knew about Cassandra. And I love the fact in that regard that she's, from the outset, trying to tell him, do not get so attached to Cassandra. Like, when they get the message, when they get his name on the message, and she tells him, remember, she is not your mission.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lie. From the outset, she knows how important Cassandra is going to become to Cole. She knows exactly how this entire thing is going to play out at that point in time.
But she also knows Cole. And she knows that, you know, he is just, he will do his own thing, and she's setting up, like, classic reverse psychology.
Almost certainly. Like, by telling...
And time itself kind of suggests, you know, says, yeah, these guys need to be together when Cole gets sent to 2006, and then they get pictures from the North Korean jail,
right.
And what's his face? Aaron finds it and then finds out he's in the insane asylum,
right.
And yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, and, like, once he starts to finally come to the kind of intellectual understanding, like, the academic, yes, okay, so time travel could possibly be real, before he has the, holy crap, time travel is real moment right in front of him.
And I love when he pops up with, like, the classic, you know, like, classic references, and Cole has no clue.
Right. Like, I don't
what?
Know what that means. Like,
well, the other thing that's interesting is, in 1987, in the bar in Japan.
Yes.
Is it just me, or did Cole basically set everything in motion by telling Goines that the corpse was important? Because Goines didn't want to buy it.
Right. Like, by trying to keep Goines from buying it, he puts the idea of what this thing could be and how much money it could make him into Goines' head, thus putting everything into motion. So in a very real sense, the whole thing is Cole's fault.
I hate it when that happens.
It's like, ah, oh, damn it. And he gets almost stabbed to death.
But, yeah, so that's... It's things like that. It's like meeting the young Jones, the whole thing with the, you know, Ramsey becoming the nemesis. And I do like the idea that, like you said, you're throwing the people who think they know what's going on for a loop.
Yeah.
By sending Cassandra into the future.
Yeah.
And then Cole going back and grabbing Ramsey and saying, nobody has to die.
Nobody has to die. We can find
right.
another way. Like, that was
right.
probably, like, at that point in time, I was already loving the show, and then he says that, and I'm like, nope, this is a good show. I love this show. Like, that's...
Yeah, and it's quite, you know, it's... You know, I haven't watched a lot of sci-fi channel stuff.
Yeah.
But it seems to me a very mature show.
Yeah, I was worried that they weren't going to handle this very well. I have had previous disappointing experiences with some sci-fi shows.
The last one I really liked on sci-fi was Warehouse 13.
Warehouse 13 I had issues with, but that was more of a personal thing. Our personalities, my show, like that show and myself, didn't really mesh very
well. It's a very different animal.
Right.
And don't say that around Lee and Rox.
I know. I never speak that out loud when they're nearby where they can hit
Good
me.
Man.
But I mean, I loved Eureka for the most part. There were some
issues.
Like some points at which they had a little hiccupy bits, but they smoothed those over.
But that was another one where they took right turns, and it's like, wait, what?
Yeah, we're going to do a different thing now. We're going to do a very different thing now. And you're like, where did that come from? Oh, wait.
Yeah.
And you follow it back, and you see exactly where it came from.
Right.
And, like, that's when they do that, they do it well. And I like that they have a history of doing that.
It sci-fi shows are very hit and miss.
Exactly.
I mean, the only one besides... Which, for right now, obviously, 12 Monkeys, the only one that I watch with any regularity on sci-fi is Face Off.
Yeah, I've watched a couple episodes of that. I haven't really watched very much. But I watched the first season. I got into it really late, which I feel, like, really bad about. But Alphas, their mutant show.
Yeah, I watched a bit of it, and I you know, the thing was, the acting was okay, but it just, they never found a different way to handle, it just seemed like an X-Men ripoff.
Right, and I think that, like, they were still struggling to try to find the thing that separated them out from that.
Yeah.
To make themselves their own thing, and I think they were starting to really find it once they started to delve deep into the how and the why of the, you know, direct genetic manipulation of these things, right? Toward the end of the series, which was, you know, the first season, they started to get really, really into that. But I think it took a little bit longer than anybody could really, you know, latch onto.
Right.
The audience kind of just lost themselves in it.
I mean, that is another thing we can say about 12 Monkeys is that it found its way very, very quickly.
Yes.
And that is an accomplishment because it does take certain shows a while.
Right. And I
that could be dangerous in this, you know, very overcrowded media market where
right.
it's like geeks now have a plethora of choices.
Yes.
So if you want to engage geeks, it's got to be good. It's got to be interesting right off the bat, or people are just gonna be like, why do I bother with you?
Right. And they did a very good job. I was actually very worried. You know, I'll be 100% honest about it. I was super duper worried about 12 Monkeys as a show.
Oh, yeah.
And then I started, like, other people I knew who were worried. They watched the first episode, and they were like, this is garbage. This is bullshit. This is nothing like the movie. Episode 3, they're like, okay. Okay. And then by episode 5, everybody's like, I'm sorry I said anything bad about this.
Well, I mean, that's one thing you have to be careful with these kind of shows that are basing themselves off of movies that don't have, like, a huge or even a minor, like, franchise behind them. You can't,
right.
They can't be the movie.
Right. Because
there are things you want to keep, obviously, but you can't do the movie. It's just, it doesn't make good drama.
Right. And I think that's actually, like, that's another thing, something I noted when I was doing my watch through. I was, you know, doing the Twitter like I do. I noted that 12 Monkeys has actually done a really good job in another similar way to Hannibal, not just the taking of the ideas and then playing with them in a very unexpected way, you know, taking the canon and then doing something very different with it, but interspersing key lines from the canon.
Oh, yeah.
Throughout the show in a way that both, like, symbolizes and holds as kind of emblematic of what that line meant in the movie or in the canon, but also making it do different work at the same time, you know? Like, when Cole says, you know, don't worry about him, he's already dead, I'm surrounded by dead people, in the show, it's the same line that Cole gives in the movie, but it's in a very different kind of context, and it does different work. Like, the way he's feeling, the experience they've both just gone through at that point in time, it does different things in the show, even while staying, you know, this is the same man, this is the person you're dealing with, this is the kind of person and the kind of mentality that he has.
Right, and when he talks about Key West.
Right.
It's a very different thing, you know,
yeah.
And also, what was interesting was when he wore the Hawaiian shirt in
yes.
Haiti.
Yes.
You know, they find these great places to put these things that people will catch on to. But you're right; they do different work. But still,
but
there are things that look, and it's their way of saying, look, we're not ignoring the movie. We're just, you know, it's fine. We know what we're doing. Just calm down.
Right.
Well, it's less of a callback than a call sideways.
Right, exactly. It's like a little homage, you know?
Right.
Like you see where we're going with this. We see where you're hoping we're going with this. Just so you know, we're all going to do a different thing. We're going to have to get used to it. But come on with us. You'll like it. Trust us.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Well, Scott, what are your we'll wrap up here so we can get on with our lives and let the listeners get on with their lives.
What
so
lives?
Exactly. Well, that you know, since we don't want to play the long time game on the podcast.
Think we have that kind of memory.
No, I don't.
Definitely not.
I don't even remember why we're here. But Scott, what are your closing thoughts on 12 Monkeys?
It shows that the sort of knee-jerk reaction of whenever anybody does a reboot, a reimagining, whatever, you know, that it's going to be bad, can be wrong. It can be done well. So I think we need to be careful about when we hear, like, something else is going to be adapted or whatever. We need to say, okay, we need to keep an open mind. Let's watch it. Let's not dismiss it out of hand. And we can have something good come out of it. So, and you can have something that is fairly complex without, you know, totally alienating your audience. And I think that hopefully will show people that you can do something that is a little bit more adult, a little bit more complicated, and still have something that people can watch and enjoy.
Well, I agree with that. I think it was, I forget the name of the author, but the book Everything Bad is Good for You was making the point about people saying, oh, television is just bad for you, it rots your brain. And he was saying, no, his point was, go back and count the number of plot lines in Lost and, you know, see if that show would have worked, you know, 10, 15 years before it happened. It wouldn't have, because audiences are more, they're more sophisticated and more able to process a huge amount of information coming at them, which is why you can have condensed shows and not have, you know, the whole, well, you got to have an A plot and then a B plot, and some episodes you've got a C plot, you know. It can be more than that. And, I mean, I also agree with you about the whole sequel reboot thing, is because when everybody says, oh, sequels are shit, I'm like, John Carpenter's the thing?
Right.
So there's always going to be an outlier.
Ben-Hur?
It's right.
No, Ben-Hur.
Careful,
Ben-Hur was originally a silent film, and they made it with, you know, the new one. Which
I know, but... I know, and they're going to remake that, so be careful which Ben-Hur you're talking
right.
about. So, all right, so, Wolven, final thoughts.
Much similar to Scott's, I think that, you know, it's a thing I have to remind myself of, is to give the adaptation a chance. Like, I'm currently barely restraining a frothing rage about the adaptation of the Lucifer series TV. But in addition to that, the idea that we are, yes, we are complexifying our tastes, you know? This plot, this idea, this complex time travel narrative, this interconnected, very, you know, high sci-fi, high concept story arc, you know, wouldn't have worked. Heck, it didn't work 6 years ago. Yeah, Sarah Connor Chronicles fails. Yeah, for various reasons, but people weren't into it. People didn't like it. Okay, that happens. But now we've got basically everybody that's seen this show, not just the people that loved the movie, not just the people that, you know its history and love Terry Gilliam, but people who just like TV, you know, like a good story, are latching on to this show, and they're very, very pleased with it. They're very, you know, they're locked into it. So I think that, yeah, we are, in 12 Monkey shows, that we are willing to go with big concept sci-fi, to work with science fiction at a high level, as long as it's done well, as long as it doesn't, you know, take us down a bunch of blind alleys for no reason, but as long as it actually weaves the big, big theory with something that people want and can care about, you know?
Yeah, I know, and I agree.
Like I said, it's like, we're spoiling for choices, so you need to be on your game, like, right off. People just gonna be like, my DVR is full. I've got to watch something else.
Right. And that's
right.
The sooner that people can, you know, can land it and get the audience drawn in, can hook them, the better off they're going to be. And I think 12 Monkeys has done a very good job making that hook very, very early in and making it work for them very early in.
Right. And I would agree. And for my final thought on this is that I think the way to, for a show, especially a genre show, to survive and thrive, we look to the example of Walking Dead,
mm-hmm.
where it's not just zombie fans and horror people that are watching that show. My mom watches that show.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So people who haven't believed me for what? Oh, it sounded like somebody else talking. People who haven't believed me for like.
Talk about your mother.
You, what?
No, it's like we are talking about your mother now.
Oh, no. That's all you're going to get about my mom. In fact, I will counter with another science fiction reference. Let me tell you about my mother.
Put your gun down.
Thank you. But no, it's basically you have to go outside of the genre pool. Otherwise, it doesn't work. I mean, like I said, my example is if you know, all you needed was your fan base to make it, then Serenity 4 would be in theaters right now, you know. but it didn't branch out and do stuff. I mean, again, like the Marvel movies, they're not making $1 billion off the Avengers by all the comic book fans going to go see it. No, they've just established that, hey, there's something in here for everybody. And I think that's what a show like 12 Monkeys can do as well. If it can get out to, quote unquote, the me-humes, who don't watch this kind of thing. And I think it would be cool because I would love to see more, you know, merging of particular genres, to where they can understand that, oh, it's not just, you know, sci-fi retro gold lame suits with ray guns.
Right.
It can be dramatic. It can have depth to it. And I think that even now we're still for fans of particular genres, we're still struggling with that. Like I was saying, with Walking Dead, people who haven't for decades believed me, where I said, no, go watch Dawn of the Dead, the original Dawn of the Dead. It's not about the zombies. They finally get what I'm talking about with Walking Dead because, like, oh, it's different than I thought. I said, I know. I've been telling you this for frickin' years. So that is my hope. And I hope that with season two of this, which I believe is due out next year, that we will get even more, if not mind fucking, then at least mind groping happening.
Oh, absolutely.
I want the show to touch my mind in inappropriate ways.
We have, hold on.
What?
Let's see. It was renewed March 12th. So hopefully it's year 2016 sometime.
Right. So we're definitely hoping for more crazy stuff in the future, and hopefully my headache will be gone by the time that the next season airs, so it can start up.
Right, as I was gonna say, just in time to get a brand new one. It'll be great.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's good. It's good. It's planning. So, all right. Well, thanks so much for listening, folks, and we will reconvene a special conference table type of panel for the next show that makes us all bleed from the nose. Until next time, bye.
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 Just have to have the last word.
That's okay. I'll give it to you. I'll cut it right there.
Fantastic.